HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
This is Margaret McCall. You're listening to Business Life Works, the show that teaches you how to use the harmonic matching process to align your thoughts, your emotions, your belief systems to create a fulfilling life. One of the topics we're going to be discussing today is procrastination and how that's related to anxiety. And I have a guest on the line who's an expert in this topic, Marianne Adams. Marianne, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Margaret.
Well, hi. Good to have you on the show today.
It's good to be here.
Yeah. So let me give our listeners a little bit of information about you, and then I'm going to give you a chance to tell us more, okay?
All right.
All right. So Marianne Richards Adams is a lecturer and author, performer, teacher, and consultant through A-plus Performing Arts. She has done international workshops, media education, press interviews, and coach clients through anxiety. She is the author of two books, Boost Core Power and Bust Anxiety. I love that. That's a great title. And the second book is called The Core Power Pro Launch Pad. She's also the author of numerous articles on overcoming anxiety and enhancing our ability. Additionally, Marianne has toured the United States as a performer, and she has 35 years' experience teaching. So I'd like to know more about, you know, your performing and a little bit about that specifically, and then also about your experience teaching.
Well, I lived in different places in the United States, so obviously I performed when I lived in different places, but I also was in a group called the Young Ambassadors, and we toured the United States. I was a dancer in that group, although I was a music major, vocal performance at college, so but I did do a lot of dancing and just did TV or radio or whatever we were doing at the time. So.
Wow, sounds good. Were you taught as a child? Did you take lessons for many years?
Oh, I did, yeah. I studied classical ballet. I was one class below the Ballet West in the western United States. And also, you know, vocal scholarships and vocal competitions, so yeah.
Sounds nice. Now, you've also been teaching. Have you been teaching dance?
I teach dance and music and theater. So
wow.
I've been an artistic director for a few groups and done choreography in colleges and community colleges. And
wonderful.
So, yeah, music, dance, theater, that's my thing.
That sounds great, yeah.
Anxiety, so.
Well, and now you're shifting more into the field of psychology. I know you're working on your PhD in clinical. Is it clinical psychology?
Correct.
Okay.
And specializing in anxiety, and that was kind of came out of working with so many students for so many years and really feeling like I didn't have the tools to, you know, really take people over some of the tough stuff, right? And so it was kind of fun to realize that there's a lot of things that you can do that are easy,
mm-hmm.
that can lift that anxiety, right? Well, you know, not just get rid of anxiety, it can lift it right out of the cells of your body. They got research on that, so it's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in the clinical psych program at Southern University?
I've been there about a year, and before that, I did my master's in with a specialty in performance anxiety and educational anxieties. So I've been at this about 7 years.
Okay.
Anxiety.
Good. That's great. I know I have a training program to teach people to be life coaches and health and wellness practitioners, and in the coaching business as well, I'm a licensed therapist, but the approach is a little bit different, and I know that it's so helpful for individuals to reach out to a therapist or to a coach to just get some tips on dealing with anxiety. So we're going to talk more today, and I'm sure you're going to help us out with some of that.
Right.
Good. Sounds great. Well, tell us a little bit more about how you got into this whole area of procrastination and what inspired you to write about it.
Well, like I said before, I started out in my master's program doing research on performance anxiety. And then I took a math class, and I went, oh, you know, I can make this research for my paper for this class a little easier if I add math anxiety to performance anxiety, and then I don't have to do as many research paper references, you know. So it was a little bit lazy, right? But I started going, oh my goodness, this math research, it goes right along with what I've seen in my music, dance, theater students. That's interesting. And then reading class, the same thing happened. I went, oh my goodness, this research on reading is following right along this track.
Right.
And I started to realize that all of these things were the same thing, and that there was really no such thing as performance anxiety or test anxiety or any of these things. That it was actually fear of coming out okay anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to realizing that things like apprehension or indecision or insecurity or procrastination were also just an anxiety, and that we think that they're this, you know, personal defect of our whole soul, you know, but actually it's the body and the mind reacting in very natural ways that are actually protective. So we start to get down on ourselves, and we think we're so awful because we're procrastinating and not realizing that there's natural mechanisms that are kicking in that are protecting and that are very kind. And that really changes the picture a little, you know, don't you think, Margaret?
Mm-hmm.
That we're not down on ourselves so much, but we're realizing, hey, this is how the body is hardwired to protect us, and one of the protections is energy.
Uh-huh.
And that's where procrastination comes in.
Talk a little bit more about what you know about. I completely agree, this hardwired to protect. I mean, it's just amazing, isn't it? Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think our listeners will find that fascinating.
Yeah, the brain makes neurotransmitters out of glucose, and the brain is only like 5% of your mass of your body, but it burns 20% of the glucose. And so when we have a task before us, the natural reaction of the body is to kind of pull back because it's just conserving glucose. And so we have this reaction that we're trying to work against, and we don't necessarily know that's happening. And so we can think, oh, I'm down on myself, that I'm not doing this, or I'm not engaging. But really, it's just kind of a built-in mechanism that's okay. And once we kind of get that understanding, it makes it a whole lot easier. But then the other thing is that the anxiety changes the way the patterns in the brain are. And the brain functions on basically two different learning patterns that they've kind of uncovered. And one is, they call it a high-level learning or a transformational type learning. And it uses more of the prefrontal cortex. So as they've been putting the EEGs on the brain and doing different ways of measuring a brain function, they found, oh my goodness, when a person has more anxiety, it pulls the thinking parts of the brain, it pulls the processing back more into the amygdala, which is your emotion center, and away from your prefrontal cortex.
So this might be getting a little clinical.
So what it really means is you're not thinking.
Let's go with this.
The prefrontal cortex is your thinking, processing, reasoning part of your brain. The amygdala is your emotional part of your brain. So here you are trying to solve problems or trying to get a task done,
mm-hmm.
and you don't have the part of your brain processing that's needed. It goes to this lower level function of the brain,
mm-hmm.
and we don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are thinking that, oh, I don't have any willpower. Well, it might be just because you don't have enough glucose. Or, oh, I'm just this awful person who is avoiding tasks, when actually when you have a little bit of anxiety, it's pulling away from the reasoning part of your brain, and you have, it's hard to do anything without your brain, right?
Right.
When I'm teaching my piano students, they get to a hard note, and they're just like, oh, I can't do this. I think, you know, the note isn't hard. Anxiety's hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, the task isn't hard. Procrastination is hard because procrastination is anxiety, and anxiety's hard. It pulls your brain back. So there's, you know, when you know what was going on in your brain, it makes it a whole lot easier to deal with the problem, because if you try to solve procrastination by pushing forward and making yourself go forward, it's a lot harder to solve the problem than to go, oh, my brain is working the way it's supposed to work. Thank you so much, brain. Mm-hmm. And my conservation of glucose is happening. Oh, thank you, body. Mm-hmm. And my brain is pulled back just because I'm a little scared. So here, I can use this tactic or that tactic to get the the brain working again. So it changes the picture a little. And
so
a little more positive.
So let's take an example. I was just with somebody not too long ago. We were in a meeting, and it was working through a process. And this person is somebody I know personally. I was helping her with, we were working together on solving something for somebody who needed to make some applications and couldn't make those applications for herself. So we were meeting with another professional. And we were going through quite a few details, okay, things that had to be done, a list of items that had to be gathered for this individual who's disabled, recently disabled. And the person that was in the meeting with me, I could feel her anxiety level going up. And she reached a point of anxiety that she just couldn't grasp anything that was being said at the meeting. She kept asking the same questions over and over again, and she wasn't retaining the response, the answer.
Yeah, you're right into that low-level thinking.
Yeah.
You really do get to a point where it's not processing. Yeah.
She did not process it. And after, you know, the first couple hours, there were times when she seemed to grasp some of it. But then as we went on in the meeting, she really wasn't grasping. And at the end of a very lengthy meeting, she said, I have no idea how to move forward. I have no idea what we need to do. I have no idea if, you know, she asked a couple of the same questions she asked during the meeting, how this will get resolved. And I could see the people at the meeting were frustrated because they had gone into great detail and patience about the whole thing. But her anxiety over her role in having to perform certain tasks on behalf of somebody else, and of course not wanting to mess that up for somebody else, she would
right.
put fear in her pathway of fear of it not going well, fear of the outcome not being what she wanted, which is what you had said earlier. And so then at the very end, she couldn't retain anything. When I walked her to the car, she said, I have no idea. And she asked a couple more questions. I said, well, do you recall that you asked that question at least three times, maybe four, and they answered that question, and you seemed at peace with their answer. This was their answer. Do you remember that? She could not remember.
Right. That will happen.
What would you say about that, and how would you help somebody like that if they came to you for coaching?
This is really common, actually, and you have to spot what's happening. So what's happened is the brain has shut down, right? And you can see it. You can see the functioning is gone. And the question that parents can ask kids if they're overwhelmed, that an employer can ask, you know, an employee or vice versa, or that you could ask a person in this situation is, what about this seems too hard? Now, while she's, you know, overwhelmed or whatever, what happens when you say, what about this seems too hard? Or how can I help you? Or these kinds of questions, what happens is there's a hint of that empathy in there, right? And
right.
that empathy and that approach allows the thinking to go back into the prefrontal cortex.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not the pressure, there's looking at it from a different angle that's, what about this seems too hard? And as there is patience with that and as there is a sense of empathy, the research shows that it tends to pull from that amygdala and that emotional part of the brain back to the prefrontal cortex. And unless they're in the prefrontal cortex, they honestly cannot think it. They cannot comprehend it. And the things that go into the memory, if you're functioning from the amygdala, can kind of go in a lump and you can't really remember or connect to other parts of life or other parts of memory, other parts of experience in your life to solve things. So when you can get it back in that prefrontal cortex, then you have that rich memory where you're able to go, oh, yeah, and I can kind of fit in my schedule this way, and that will kind of work this way, and I can probably do that. And if I have a problem, I can call so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
So it changes how their brain is functioning. So you have to kind of get them back into a brain function, and that question is like a magic bullet. What about this seems too hard? How can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is being able to say, sometimes, like with my students, I will bring these neural concepts into every single lesson. And I'll say, did you know how you felt really tense right there? Do you know how that was really kind of hard right there? It seems like your body got a little tense there, or your breathing changed.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can sense that tension, and micro amounts of anxiety can slightly affect the brain. And so I'll talk to them about that. And so I don't know in a situation like this if it's appropriate, but you can just say, you know, when you're starting something out, there's so much new. And it gets to be more familiar, and it gets to be more comfortable. So what are we doing? Well, we're not only teaching the reality of it, that you've just been hit with so much information, and it's tough to process it all,
mm-hmm.
and it's just going to take a little bit of time for it to all kind of gel. But the other thing is that it gets the brain working again. So even if you do have time, if the brain, you know, time to process it and, you know, put the pieces together, if the brain isn't working, it's still going to be pretty tough, or if it's kind of slowed down. And that doesn't completely not work. It goes by degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you can get that brain working and the more you address the anxiety in these gentle ways, the more they settle down and the brain just starts to function and pieces start to come together. So, yeah,
sense.
It's a tough one, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there is anxiety, no matter what kind of anxiety, if you can bring emotion down a notch,
mm-hmm.
it always helps. And some people say, well, why don't you get rid of the fear altogether? Why don't you, you know, get rid of the anger altogether? Whatever the emotion is that is triggering it to go, you know, the prefrontal cortex is not involved. And one of the reasons you bring it down, in my experience, that you bring it down only a notch is that if you try to completely get rid of the fear or completely get rid of the anger or whatever the negative warning signal is that's telling you something doesn't feel safe here, if you just bring it down a notch, then you get the brain functioning. If you bring it, try and get rid of it, mm-hmm. there's a tendency to disconnect from your feelings
uh-huh.
and kind of deny them and suppress them, and then that warning signal will just keep just come back either as a trigger
right.
or it'll persist in that particular situation. And so it's just a little bit more functional to just bring it down a notch and notice what's going on.
Marianne, that makes sense, because I think exactly what you're saying, when if we're trying, we're coaching or counseling somebody, and we try to keep going all the way to the root here in one session or in a short amount of time, it's too much, because it does have roots. This fear, this anxiety has roots, and
yeah.
we can't just pull up the roots, yank up the roots, right? We can't do that. But I like what you're saying. Bring it down a notch. Find that peace. Be empathetic as the person, the helping person, the
well,
empathy and the patient.
The thing that we usually try to do is we try to solve the wrong problem. So she thinks the problem is that she is not understanding the information and she's not clear on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually not the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that she's not able to think.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you keep trying to explain the information over and over again, well, that could even make anxiety raise and make it even worse. Right? The trick is to kind of settle in on the right thing.
That makes sense. It does. So we're going to come back in just a moment. We are here and we are talking with Marianne Adams about procrastination. Stay tuned and I'll talk to you in a minute.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCraw You're listening to Business Life Works, produced by HealthyLife.net. And we are here today speaking with my guest, Marianne Adams, who is an expert on dealing with procrastination and the hidden causes of procrastination having to do with anxiety. So, Marianne, we were having a lively discussion before we took that segment break. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Good, good. So before we get back into discussing some of the things about procrastination, some of the aspects of it, and how to address procrastination, I would like you to tell our listeners where they can find your information on your website, how they can best buy your two books, The Boost Care Power and Bust Anxiety, and The Core Power Pro Launchpad. And then if there's any special offerings you have on your website, I think I saw some nice tips. Please let them know about that.
Yes, my website is A Plus Performing Arts. So it's all spelled out, A Plus, spelled out plus, performingarts.com. And my book is Boost Core Power and Bust Anxiety. That's available on Amazon and soon in bookstores. And the other one is the Core Power Pro Launch Pad. And it's a workbook that goes with the Boost Core Power and Bust Anxiety to apply those concepts to VIP personal life. So,
great.
And on my website, I've got opportunities to do counseling for people who have, not counseling, but coaching for anxiety. We also have tips on overcoming anxiety and relationship anxiety, appearance anxiety, financial anxiety, all these different kinds of anxieties that are all outcome-based anxiety.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now, are you providing the coaching, or do you have others who work for you doing that?
I do the coaching,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, good. So this is your business. This website
is
all about your business. Okay, good. Good. Okay, so we were just talking about, the example I gave when somebody really just stops being able to process information because anxiety is so great. Some tips for them. If they came to you for help, are there some exercises and things that you would have them do?
Well, like I said, the first thing is to understand how the brain is working and how it's working properly, mm-hmm. and then being able to work with the body. But there's other things that are helpful with procrastination. For example, there's kind of a drag that happens when you first start an activity. So I don't know, if your listeners have ever experienced getting up in the morning and going, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. Or, you're done with your lunch break. Oh, I don't want to go back to work. And to overcome that initial drag, there's some little tricks that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Research has shown that if you respond to a kind of a prompting or an idea that you think would be beneficial to you, if you respond within 5 seconds, that can make a huge difference in success.
Say that again. So, if you respond, say that again.
If you respond within 5 seconds of an idea that you think is going to be beneficial to you,
mm-hmm.
that it can make a huge difference in a person's success. Because we can talk ourselves out of, going into something that we should. Like maybe you get an idea, or you're feeling like I really should go exercise, and you put it right into your schedule. Or it's time for you in the schedule to go exercise, and you just go and act on it. Or I should go call someone, or whatever the task might be. If you do it within 5 seconds, it's a huge thing. But there's a little bit more to that, because if we have something hanging over our head, and procrastination, you've always got something hanging over your head, right? Something needs to be done, and you're putting it off. That creates a drag on the body, and glucose, again, is what your brain is running off of, and it consumes more glucose when you have something that's a grudge or something that's a drag. So if we are doing a task and we're going, I don't want to do this, we're actually burning a much higher level of glucose. And anybody who's had stress for any period of time, you kind of feel burned out at the end, right? You get done with a tough task, and you're feeling this burnout, you're tired, you're dragging. And that's actually a very literal thing. A person who's feeling burnt out actually is burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
Their glucose levels have burnt much, much higher. So a person who trains themselves to respond cheerfully can, I mean, if you have to do a task anyway, make sure you do it cheerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're cheerful, it burns much, much less glucose, and it helps to overcome that drag that happens in the body.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way that a person can overcome procrastination, is just going, hey, got to do it anyway. Let's just go. Let's go have some fun.
Uh-huh.
So that's one thing that can happen with one of the tricks for it. Another thing you can do, which I think is just hilarious, is to reverse procrastinate. So, you know, we put things off way to the last minute. You know, a student has put off a paper, and, you know, if you don't get that paper in, you're going to get enough. So if you take that paper and immediately do 80% of the task and just jump right in, and then if you have more time later, take it to the last 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you do that is, well, I have to tell you, when I first heard about reverse procrastination, I had a speaking engagement on new material, and so I needed to prepare it. And it was, you know, a few weeks off, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to try this reverse procrastination. So I jumped right in, and I did what I thought was 80% of it. And then life happened, and I'm right before I have to do this presentation, and I open up and I'm like, oh my goodness, I've got to do this, and I've only done 80% of it, and I have no idea, you know, I've got to pull this back up.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled it up and looked at it, and I went, wow, I actually did 95. I only have to like do a couple things on this, and I'm completely done.
Mm-hmm.
And I started thinking about it. Why did I think it was 80% when it was actually pretty much done? And it was because there was no drag. There was no drag from the procrastination. There was no drag from the glucose burnout. There was no worry because I had done all of this stuff beforehand. And that's when I really went, oh, wow, this is really a powerful concept to reverse procrastinate. Well, why do we wait anyway? Because of perfectionism. And we're worried about getting, so we either have the drag going on that's pulling us down, and that protection inside, or we have this perfectionism, like, I want to do this perfect, and I don't really know how to do it, so I'm just not going to do it right now, I'm going to wait, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that perfectionism kicking in, and the reverse procrastination by doing 80% really gets over that perfectionism hump that kind of sets things back as well.
It gets into the perfection. So explain that a little bit more. Doing the 80% gets over the perfectionism because...
Well, perfectionism is, it doesn't have anything to do with doing things perfect. There are people who are perfectly grungy.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of the... And there's...
I want you to talk a little bit more about this, and we need to take a segment break. So we'll be back in just a moment talking with Marianne Adams about procrastination.
Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
This is Margaret McCraw with Business Life Works. We are here today speaking with Marianne Adams, and we are talking a bit about the topic of procrastination and dealing with anxiety. And before we took the segment break, we were talking about this 80% reverse, what is it? You tell us.
Reverse procrastination.
Reverse procrastination by 80%, is that right?
Reverse procrastination, do 80% right away, and
okay,
then the last you can procrastinate. Well, we were talking about perfectionism,
mm-hmm,
and most people think that perfectionism is about doing things, you know, like way over the top, amazingly wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But perfectionism can actually be either way. It can be doing things amazingly wonderful, or it can be a reactionism perfectionism, which is doing things amazingly awful.
Mm-hmm.
But the underlying concept of both of those kinds of perfectionism is feeling incapable of successfully handling the situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's this outcome anxiety. It's this you're in a reaction. So perfection isn't what is done. Perfectionism is how and why something is done. So when someone is going over the top extreme on either end of things, it's how they are trying to get emotional safety. And emotional safety is not optional. Every person on the planet has to be emotionally safe. And so the problem with perfectionism is trying to get emotional safety through other people. So if you think that you can be totally amazing and people will just admire what you do, you can get perfectionism by going way over the top, and that's how you're getting your emotional safety. You can also go, I am never going to be able to be amazing, so I'm going to be react, and I am going to be my own person, and I'm going to be grungy, or I'm going to be whatever. But it's still a kind of perfectionism. It's perfectly imperfect in this reaction to get this emotional safety. So how and why a person does something. So you could have somebody who has just amazingly clean house. It's totally pristine. And if they do it to be able to have emotional safety, and the how they're doing it is overboard and not balanced with life, and why they're doing it is to be esteemed, how and why, then it can be damaging, right?
Sure.
But if you have somebody who has an amazing, pristine house, but they do it just because they get a kick out of having it clean, it's fun, they enjoy it, they're not trying to get their self-esteem out of it, then it's not perfectionism, even though they might be exactly the same amount of clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so this perfectionism really plays into why a person procrastinates.
Excuse me one second. I just want to say, so what I see the difference between what you're talking about, the reason behind somebody cleaning their house perfectly, right?
Right.
The issue is some people do it because their well-being depends on doing it, whereas others do it because they enjoy it.
Right.
They like the result or the outcome of doing it.
Yeah, and in my book I mention it's the difference of core power. You know, if you have this strength, this core strength inside of yourself, you don't need someone else to admire how your house is. And you don't need someone else to admire your clothes and admire your hair. But if someone is over on the other end of the spectrum and they are getting from someone, so this other person is giving to someone, they've got core power, they've got core strength, they are able to give to those around them, they're cleaning this house because it's just fun and it's this gift. On the other hand, you've got people who are getting. They are cleaning the house because they need this self-esteem. They need this feeling of being good enough. And they're getting something from the people around them. Well, they've lost their core power, because any time someone else has control over your sense of self, you've lost your core power, and you need to have strong core power. And there's skills that you can do it. That's my whole book is full of that. You have to understand the problem before you can actually fix something, right? And so if a person thinks that it's procrastination and perfectionism that's the problem, then they will be endlessly procrastinating or endlessly battling those problems or perfectionism or whatever. But if they understand, this core issue is actually my sense of self-esteem, and it's actually how I'm getting my emotional safety, then that changes the whole picture. It changes the whole picture whether you're dealing with performance anxiety or whether you're dealing with procrastination anxiety or perfectionism anxiety.
So let's talk about that a minute, because on the show we talk a bit about law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I explain to listeners is that every time we put our well-being on hold, waiting for something to happen. So if our well-being is on hold, waiting for something outside of us to happen, waiting for that A on the paper, waiting for us to get into a certain school to do our PhD, waiting for that relationship to show up, waiting for that job to, you know, the job interview to turn into a job offer. Every time we do that, we're keeping our our desires from us. We're keeping it at arm's length.
Yeah.
Because when we're when our well-being depends on something happening outside of us, that creates a vibration of anxiety, right?
Exactly.
And that anxiety keeps it at a distance. We can't bring it in. So
I honestly think there's so much to that. Yes, there's a chapter in my book that's on intrinsic worth versus extrinsic worth, and it comes after emotional safety, because you really have to understand emotional safety to understand how much anxiety drives behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, it drives how you respond. So if you are waiting for something, then you're getting this extrinsic worth, and you can have intrinsic worth in an instant just by deciding that you are precious and priceless and you don't have to prove your worth. And there's a lot of other skills that we need in order to be able to maintain that, but really, truly, that really comes down to this intrinsic worth and being able to give yourself emotional safety rather than getting it from all the people around you. Because even if a person loves you, even if you've got people around you who are completely supportive, there's no substitute for being able to support yourself. And it's never as powerful as what you can get from someone else. And, you know, we're all human, and we rub up against each other, and someone might have a bad day or whatever, and we don't want other people to determine our self-worth.
No.
And our ability to maintain this core strength inside of ourselves.
Well, we would all be anxious if we did that, right?
And really what you're talking about is anytime you are lacking those vibrations, you're lacking that strength, you're lacking that sense of perspective and awareness of your own feelings and emotions and thoughts, anytime you have that, you're lacking that intrinsic. So, yeah, that's really powerful.
It is powerful. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back for our last segment with Mary Ann Adams, and we're talking today about procrastination. Be back in a moment.
Expanding your mind. HealthyLife.net.
This is Margaret McCall. We are speaking today with Mary Ann Williams. Our show is all about...
Adams.
I'm sorry, Mary Ann Adams. Yes, Mary Ann Adams.
That's the only mistake you've ever made.
No, I'm good with mistakes. As long as I learn from them, then I'm okay.
Love it.
Mary Ann Adams. And Mary Ann Adams is speaking with us today about procrastination and anxiety and how to overcome some of the lower energies that are associated with procrastination. So this is our last segment, and I want to talk a little bit more about some tips, and I would like to address the whole thing with procrastination. You know, sometimes, you know, as far as my own tip, one thing that I've done, because I can procrastinate, usually if I feel overly confident in a task, I feel that, oh, I got this one.
Yeah.
I got this one. This is not hard. This will take me about an hour. And I underestimate, because in my mind, I know the material. I know that I know what I'm going to be. Let's say I'm giving a talk, and it's going to be PowerPoint, and maybe it's a new talk, but I know the material so well. I may think it's going to take me an hour, when really, to put it together the way I want to put it together and process the training and do all the breakouts and the experiential stuff, it'll probably be a four-hour job.
Right.
So I started at 8 o'clock at night thinking I'm going to be done by 9, mm-hmm. and I've learned through the years that it will be 2 or 3 in the morning before I'm done, and I'm getting up at 8 o'clock. I'm getting up at 6 to be prepared to give a talk at 8. So I have historically...
I know you're the only person who does that, Margaret.
I have done that, but again, it's because I just, in my mind, I think, oh, I know this, you know, I know it, but I don't really measure properly the time that it takes for me to put it together. You know, I'm very meticulous about presentations and workshops and making sure that I have enough breakout groups and things that I'm going to be doing that's experiential, and so it takes a little time to think about that.
Right.
So at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm thinking about that. So I've learned.
Your brain is functioning extremely well.
Yes, it does, actually. Because in 6 hours, I certainly don't want to be sitting there going off the cuff, you know.
Right.
So what I've learned to do is I'll look. look, when I set up an agreement with somebody to give a talk, I give myself a false deadline. I'll say, okay, Margaret, it's maybe September 28th, this talk, what's the, you know, let's say it's going to be September 28th, I'll throw out a month. And it will be, in my mind, I'll say, okay, by September 15th, you must have it done because you need to give them your PowerPoint presentations and they need to have time to do stuff. Plus, the
handouts or whatever.
Yeah. And the week before the training, you will, the week before the training, you have da-da-da-da-da-da-da that you want to give your attention to. So your date, your hard, fast date is September 15th. And then I put alerts on my calendar the week before that, 2 weeks before that, you know. But usually it's September 14th that we're talking about. And if I stay,
do you have any idea how many false deadlines have saved you?
Yes. Well, and it keeps me relaxed because throughout the process I'll say, look, this is a false deadline, but you have to stick to it because you have other things you need to do on the 16th. So, so I may be up late. Doing it because I've still given myself that deadline and I still have some, maybe an old habit attached to it. But I'm not up at 2 o'clock in the morning the day before the presentation, right?
Right.
Which is
right.
What matters to me. Mm-hmm. So any thoughts on that?
A lot of times we force ourselves through the procrastination. And I think it's much more helpful to understand. So you have just described a lot of understanding of yourself, right? And so as a way of dealing with that, you can be able to work with that and not have it end up being too much of a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think one question that when we have a sense of pulling back is to say, why the resistance? So you don't have too much resistance as far as not getting started. It's just that you're waiting or thinking, oh, it's not going to take that long. Mm-hmm. But then you have a method that you can deal with that. And I think everybody kind of has to get to know themselves mm-hmm. and understand themselves. And if you're pulling away and disconnecting from yourself, thinking that there's this or that part of you is unlovable or an awful part, like I'm just a horrible procrastinator or something, then it's really hard to get to know yourself and say, what about this is, you know, too hard, or why am I resisting this? Or, you know, and asking questions is a lot more effective than forcing oneself. I have to do this right now, you know.
Right.
Sometimes you have to kick in and get the job done, but it's a lot easier when you understand yourself, you understand how your body's working, you understand your methods and your way of doing things. And you did a kind of a reverse procrastination. And I don't know if you realize that, but see, by going early and saying, I have to get this done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you end up with a lot less drag on it. There's other things that are really nice to do for yourself. One is to time things. I remember once I had a whole long list of things I had to do for housework, right? And I'm just thinking, oh, I have so much to do. And so I decided to time it, and I went and I pulled out my stopwatch, and I timed how long it took to make my bed. Literally, it took 10 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe
right.
that I let a 10-second task drag me down.
Mm-hmm.
And we do that all the time.
You're
we
right.
let things drag us down, which it takes more energy to be anxious about it than to actually do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing that's really helpful. Another thing is to reverse worry. To say, okay, I'm just going to get this task. I'm just going to get started on this. I have no idea how I'm really going to deal with this problem. Maybe I don't know how to deal with a problem I have at work or with my child or whatever, but I'm just going to jump in and start working on it or this research paper or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to jump right in, and then I'll worry later. If I still need to worry, I'm going to worry later.
I think that's a good one.
that pulls off some of the drag as well.
That sounds great. So we have to wrap up, Marianne Adams, and we are going to I just want to have your listeners know your website again, or be given your website again. So please give that to them and the title of your books.
Oh, Oh, thanks, Margaret. My website is A+ Performing Arts, all spelled out. And we do anxiety busting there. So I do counseling. I've got tips on there. I've got a couple of books on dealing with anxiety. And we think that test anxiety, performance anxiety, financial anxiety, relationship anxiety, we think all these things are different things, but they're all one thing. Mm-hmm. They're fear of coming out okay anxiety. And that's what we deal with, outcome anxiety, A+ Performing Arts.
Sounds great. Marianne, thank you today for your time and lively conversation about this topic, a much-needed topic to be discussed and understood. So you take good care, best with your books, and let me know when you've got another book out. And
thanks so much, Margaret.
You're up for the show, okay?
All right, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNradio.com.
This is Margaret McCall. You've been listening to our show, Business Life Works, and today we had a lively conversation about procrastination and how to release the anxiety that is really the root of procrastination. If you feel that you're someone who would like to understand these concepts better, that you really are good at helping people move through difficult times, stressors in life, helping them get a new perspective and to be able to mobilize themselves into creating a powerful, loving life, one that they are happy to get up in the morning and move throughout their day. If that's something that you feel you're natural at, if that's something that you'd like to learn more about in terms of your own life moving forward, then give us a call. We have several options for you. We have coaches that work with our clients on dealing with anxiety, dealing with career, dealing with creating desires and relationships and health and wellness. And then we also have certification training programs that you might want to look into and learn more about if you feel you're natural at helping others. So you can reach us at area code 410-929-9302 or just go to our website, which is bhcld.com. That's B like boy, H like house, C like cat, L like Larry, D like David, bhcld.com. And you can learn more about our training and our coaching. We'll see you next month, and we will have a wonderful, lively conversation about a new topic. Talk to you soon.